the peas. Then she told them she liked Oreos better, and they tried to drown her in a giant vat of fudge. She woke in a cold sweat and decided sleep was overrated. When morning came, she took a quick shower and threw on her best jeans and a shirt she'd never worn, buttery yellow with brown stripes. It was the only item in her closet that wasn't gray, and she'd always been too self-conscious to wear it. But the color brought out the gold flecks in her eyes, and today she would see fits again. As much as she hated to admit it, she wanted to look good. She even clipped part of her hair back and toyed with the idea of lip gloss. But that was going too far. Then she snuck downstairs to check outside for him. She crept into the front yard, blinking to keep the falling ash out of her eyes. The smoke was so thick, it stuck to her skin. Seriously, when were they going to get the fires contained?
"Looking for someone?"
her next-door neighbor asked from his perch in the middle of his lawn. Mr. Forkle could always be found there, rearranging hundreds of garden gnomes into elaborate tableau.
"No," she said, hating how nosy he was. "I was checking to see if the smoke was any better. I guess it's not."
She coughed for added effect. His beady blue eyes bored into hers, and she could tell from his thoughts that he didn't believe her.
"You kids,"
he grumbled.
"Always up to something."
Mr. Forkle loved to start sentences with the words, "You kids." He was old and smelled like feet and was always complaining about something. But he was the one who called 911 when she fell and hit her head, so she was obligated to be nice. He moved a gnome a fraction of an inch to the left.
"You should get back inside before the smoke gives you another one of those headaches you're always."
Loud yapping interrupted him, and a ball of fur with legs streaked up the sidewalk, barking its tiny head off. A blonde guy in spandex jogging shorts chased after it.
"Would you mind grabbing her?"
he called to Sophie as the dog raced across her lawn.
"I'll try."
The dog was quick, but Sophie managed to step on the leash with a clumsy lunge. She kneeled, stroking the wild-eyed, panting creature to calm her down.
"Thank you so much,"
the guy said as he ran up the path. As soon as he drew close, the dog growled and strained against the leash, barking like mad.
"She's my sister's dog,"
he shouted over the noise.
"She hates me. Not my sister. The dog,"
he added. He held out his hand, displaying several half-moon bite wounds, fresh and still bleeding. One was so deep, it would definitely leave a scar. Sophie picked up the trembling dog and hugged her. Why was the dog so afraid?
"I don't suppose you'd be willing to carry her back to my sister's house. It's just a few blocks away. And she seems to like you better than me."
He winked one of his piercing blue eyes.
"She most certainly will not,"
Mr. Forkle yelled before she could open her mouth to answer.
"Sophie, go inside, and you,"
he pointed to the jogger,
"get out of here, now, or I'm calling the police."
The guy's eyes narrowed.
"I wasn't asking you."
"I don't care," Mr. Forkle interrupted. "Get away from her now."
The barking grew louder as the guy moved towards Sophie. She could barely think through the chaos, but there was something in his expression that made her wonder if he was planning to grab her and drag her away. And that's when it hit her. She couldn't hear his thoughts. Even with the barking, she should have heard something. Would Fitz have sent someone else in his place? But if he had, why wouldn't the jogger say that? Why try to trick her? Before she could react, Mr. Forkle stepped between them, stopping the jogger in his tracks. Mr. Forkle might be on the old side, but he was a large man, and when he straightened up to his full height, he made quite an intimidating figure. They stared each other down for a few seconds,
Then the jogger shook his head and backed off.
Sophie, let the dog go,
Mr. Forkel ordered. She did as he said, and the dog raced away. The jogger glowered at them both before he took off after it. Sophie released the breath she'd been holding.
You're okay,
Mr. Forkel promised.
If I see him again, I'll call the police.
She nodded, trying to find her voice. Thanks, Mr. Forkel snorted, shaking his head and grumbling something that started with,
You kids,
as he returned to his lawn gnomes.
Better get inside.
Right, she agreed, moving up the path on shaky legs. As soon as the front door closed, she leaned against it, trying to make sense of the scattered questions racing through her brain. Why would that guy try to grab her? Could he be another elf? Fitz had some serious explaining to do, whenever he decided to make his next appearance. There was still no sign of Fitz when she got to school, and now she wasn't sure what to do. He might be waiting for her to be alone before he appeared, but after the dog incident, she wanted a few eyewitnesses around. Unless Fitz had sent the jogger to get her. It was also frustrating and confusing. She headed for class when the bell rang, lurking a few steps behind the other students. A hand grabbed her arm and pulled her into the shadows between buildings. Sophie stopped her scream just in time when she recognized Fitz.
Where have you been?
She demanded, a little too loudly. Several heads turned their way.
Do you have any idea what I've been going through?
Miss me bad, huh?
He whispered, flashing a cocky smile. She felt the blood rush to her face and looked away to hide her blush.
More like you left me alone with a ton of unanswered questions and no way to find you. And then this guy shows up and tries to grab me and—
Whoa, wait. What guy?
I don't know, she said. Some creepy blonde guy tried to trick me into wandering off with him. And when I wouldn't, it looked like he was going to snatch me. But I wasn't sure because I couldn't hear his thoughts. And I think he might be another elf.
Okay, slow down.
Fitz swept his hair back.
No one else knows you're here. Only my dad. And he sent me to get you.
Then why couldn't I hear his thoughts?
I don't know,
he admitted.
Are you sure you couldn't?
She replayed the scene, trying to remember. There had been a lot of barking and growling, her heart pounding in her ears. She couldn't even remember hearing Mr. Forkel's thoughts, now that she thought about it, and she could always hear his.
Maybe not, she said quietly.
My guess is he was human, and maybe his mind is just quieter than the others. But we'll check with my dad. We'd better move, though.
He pointed to a teacher who was eyeing them like she suspected impending mischief.
We can't leap with people around.
Leap?
She squeaked as he pulled her behind the English building.
I can't ditch class, Fitz. They'll call my parents. And after yesterday, I think my mom might strangle me.
This is important, Sophie. You have to come with me.
Why?
Just trust me.
She locked her knees so he couldn't pull her any farther. She couldn't keep disappearing all the time. Elf or not, she had a life here, with classes she could fail and parents who could ground her.
How am I supposed to trust you when you won't even tell me anything?
You can trust me, because I'm here to help you.
That wasn't good enough. If he wouldn't tell her what was going on, she knew how to find out. It was strange to willingly use her telepathy after so many years trying to block it, but it was the only way to find out what he was hiding. So she closed her eyes and reached for his thoughts the way she had the day before. The breeze brushed through her mind, whispering scattered pieces of information. Nothing she needed, though. But when she pushed a little further, she found what he was hiding.
A test? She shrieked. What am I being tested for?
You read my mind?
He dragged her deeper into the shadows, shaking his head. Hard.
You can't do that, Sophie. You can't listen to someone's thoughts anytime you want to know something. There are rules.
You've tried to read my mind without my permission.
That's different. I'm on assignment.
What's that supposed to mean?
Fitz ran his hand through his hair, which he seemed to do when he was frustrated.
It doesn't matter. What matters is you could get in big trouble for invading someone's mind like that. It's a serious offense.
The way he said, serious, made everything inside her scrunch and twist together.
Really? She asked quietly.
Yeah. So don't do it again.
She started to nod, but a small movement at a nearby oak caught her attention, and she froze, her heart hammering so hard it drowned out everything else. It was only for a second, but she could have sworn she saw the jogger's face.
He's here, she whispered. The guy who tried to grab me.
Where?
Fitz scanned the campus. She gestured toward the tree, but there was no one around. No thoughts nearby either. Did she imagine it? Fitz pulled the silver pathfinder from his pocket and adjusted the crystal.
I don't see anyone, but let's get out of here. We shouldn't keep everyone waiting anyway.
Who's everyone?
My parents, and a committee of our counselors. It's part of the test you heard me thinking about when you broke into my head.
He shot her a sidelong glance, and she felt her cheeks heat up.
Sorry, she mumbled.
She never thought of telepathy as breaking in before, but she could see his point. His thoughts hadn't automatically filled her mind the way they did with humans. She'd shoved her way in and took them. She'd be furious if someone did that to her. She wouldn't make that mistake again. It wasn't like she'd ever enjoyed being a telepath anyway. Reading minds always caused way more problems than it solved. Fitz took her hand and led her into the sunlight.
Ready?
He asked, as he held up the pathfinder. She nodded, hoping he couldn't feel the way her arm was shaking.
Can you tell me what the test determines?
He grinned as his eyes locked with hers.
Your future.
7.
Sophie had to shield her face as she surveyed her new surroundings. The enormous metal gate in front of them glowed as bright as sunlight, nearly blinding her.
Welcome to Everglen,
Fitz said, leading her toward the doors.
What do you think?
It's very bright,
he laughed.
Here, the gate absorbs all the light, so no one can leap directly inside. My dad works for the council, so he likes his privacy at home.
I guess.
After her stressful morning, it was nice to know she would be safe, but she couldn't help wondering what they were trying to keep out. She doubted King Kong could get past the massive doors.
A faint click sounded, and the gate swung inward.
A striking figure stood in a small, grassy clearing, surrounded by the same enormous trees she'd seen growing along the river in the capital. A floor-length midnight blue cape was fastened across his shoulders, with a clasp that looked like a pair of yellow, diamond-encrusted wings. He was tall and lean, with the same vibrant teal eyes and dark wavy hair. It was impossible to miss the family resemblance.
Sophie, this is my father, Alden,
Fitz introduced. She wasn't sure if she should bow or curtsy, or shake hands. How should she greet an elf? She managed a shy wave.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Sophie,
Alden said, with an accent more prominent than Fitz's.
I see Fitz wasn't kidding about the brown eyes. Most unusual.
She could feel her cheeks flush.
Oh, yeah.
Alden smiled.
There's nothing to be embarrassed about. I think the color is quite pretty.
don't you, Fitz?
She couldn't look at Fitz as he agreed. Her face felt like it might actually be on fire.
Did you tell anyone else where Sophie was? Fitz asked.
Only the council. Why?
Sophie said someone tried to take her this morning.
Alden's eyes widened.
Are you okay?
He asked, scanning Sophie like he was checking for injury.
Yeah, he never got close enough to grab me. He just looked like he wanted to.
Humans,
Alden muttered.
Actually, Sophie thought he might be an elf, Fitz told him.
Father and son shared a look. Then Alden shook his head.
Kidnapping is a human crime. I've never heard of an elf even considering such a thing, much less trying it.
What made you think it was one of us?
I might have been wrong, she said, feeling silly and paranoid.
I just can't remember hearing his thoughts, which has only happened around Fitz. And now you.
Yes. Fitz told me about your telepathy.
He reached out to touch her forehead.
Do you mind?
She didn't want to be rude, but she couldn't help taking a step back.
I mean you no harm, I assure you.
I'd love to see your memories of the kidnapper, if that's okay.
She was surprised he'd asked her permission. Fitz really was right about the rules for telepaths. Didn't mean she liked the idea of having her memories searched through. She glanced at Fitz, and he nodded, trying to reassure her, but it was the kindness in Alden's eyes that made her agree.
Alden placed two fingers gently against her temples and closed his eyes.
She tried to hold still and avoid thinking about how good Fitz looked in his dark jacket. But as the seconds ticked by, she could feel her knees start to shake.
Well,
Alden said as he pulled his hands away.
You are indeed a fascinating girl.
Couldn't hear her either, could you?
Fitz asked him, sounding triumphant.
No.
Alden took both of her hands.
Well, I'll look into what happened this morning, but I'm sure there's no reason to worry. You're here now, and it's perfectly safe in our world.
He frowned, and his head jerked toward Fitz.
I specifically told you not to let her leap again without a nexus.
Sorry, I forgot. Sophie thought she saw the guy who tried to grab her, so we had to get out of there quick. But we're fine. I had us covered.
That's not the point.
Alden held out his hand, and Fitz dug a small black cuff out of his coat pocket and handed it to him. Alden clamped the bracelet around Sophie's right wrist, twisting it until it fit snug.
Is that comfortable?
She nodded, staring at her new accessory. The wide band had a single teal jewel set into the front, a smooth gray rectangle on the back, and intricate symbols etched all around. She blinked when she realized they were letters. Letters that spelled out gibberish, which seemed like an odd way to decorate a bracelet. But what wasn't odd about this world? Alden twisted the band again, and it clicked with finality.
There. All set.
What is it?
A safety precaution. Your body has to break into tiny particles to be carried by the light, and the nexus holds those particles together until your concentration is strong enough to do it for you. Fitz never should have let you leap without one, even with the stressful circumstances.
But Fitz doesn't have one on, Sophie pointed to his bare wrist.
I got mine off early. My concentration is strong enough for three people, which is why we're fine.
Sophie's not even a little bit faded, and you know it.
Only fools overestimate their skills, son. You've never had to watch someone fade away. Perhaps if you had, you would be more cautious.
Fitz's eyes dropped to the ground.
What does it mean to fade away? Sophie asked quietly.
A second passed before Alden answered, and he looked like he was watching a memory.
It's when you lose too much of yourself in a leap. Your body isn't able to fully reform, and eventually the light pulls the rest of you away, and you're lost forever. Sophie felt goosebumps dimple her skin. Alden cleared his throat. It's only happened a few times, and we'd prefer to keep it that way. He shot a reproving look at Fitz. Fitz shrugged.
Fine. The next time you send me on a secret mission to collect a long-lost elf, I'll be sure to put the Nexus on before I leap her here.
Alden's lips looked like they wanted to smile as he motioned for Sophie and Fitz to follow him down the path.
We shouldn't keep our guests waiting.
Sophie wiped her palms on her jeans and took a deep breath before she followed him down the narrow path, lined with trees blooming blue and red and pink and purple, every color of the rainbow. The air was so thick with the perfume of their flowers, it was almost dizzying. A nice change from the smoky air back home.
How exactly does this test decide my future?
They're testing you to see if you qualify for Foxfire.
Fitz paused, like that was supposed to mean something.
Isn't that glowing fungus? She asked.
Alden cracked up. Fitz looked a little insulted.
It's our most prestigious academy.
You named your most prestigious academy after fungus?
It represents a bright glow in a darkened world.
But the light comes from fungus.
Fitz rolled his eyes.
Will you stop saying fungus? Only those with the strongest talent qualify for Foxfire. And if you don't get in, you might as well kiss your future goodbye.
Alden placed his hand on her shoulder.
You'll have to excuse my son. He's very proud to attend Foxfire, and it's definitely an accomplishment. But don't let him worry you. The earliest levels are more of a testing ground to see who develops abilities that qualify them to continue with their studies.
The idea of going to an elven academy made her head spin. Would she have to sneak away every day? She didn't see how that could work. But she doubted her parents would knowingly let her leap to a secret elven school either. If they really were her parents. Cold chills mixed with sudden nausea as last night's troubling revelation rushed back. But she shoved the sickening thought to a dark corner of her mind. One problem at a time.
Is it going to be hard to get into Foxfire? She asked.
Counselor Bronte will be difficult to impress,
Alden admitted.
He feels your upbringing and lack of proper education should disqualify you. Plus, he doesn't like surprises. The council had no idea you existed until today, and he's more than a little miffed about it. But you only need 2 out of 3 votes. Just do the best you can.
The council didn't know about her. Then why did Fitz say they'd been looking for her for 12 years? Before she could ask, they arrived at another clearing, and all coherent thoughts vanished. Dozens of squat, brown-skinned creatures with huge gray eyes tended a garden that belonged in a fairy tale. Lush plants grew up and down and sideways and slantways.
One of the creatures shuffled by, carrying a basket filled with twinkling purple fruit.
What? It was the only word Sophie could come up with.
I'm guessing this isn't quite how you pictured gnomes, is it?
Alden asked.
No.
These definitely weren't little old men in pointy hats, like Mr. Forkel's lawn statues.
So, you have gnomes for servants?
Alden stopped to stare at her.
We would never have servants. The gnomes choose to live with us because it's safer in our world, and they help in our gardens because they enjoy it. We're privileged to have them. You'll get your first taste of gnomish produce during lunch. And you're in for quite a treat.
She watched a gnome dig slimy yellow tubers that looked like giant slugs out of the ground.
She hoped none of those was on the menu.
She peeled her eyes away from the strange scene as Alden led her out of the garden to a meadow with a house in the center. One so large, so elegant, she couldn't believe anyone could call it home. Part castle, part manor. It was made almost entirely of intricately cut crystal. And among the numerous turrets and gables rose a tower that resembled a lighthouse. They passed through two massive doors made of braided silver and entered a round foyer, which sparkled like a prism in the sunlight.
"This way," Alden said,
taking her hand and bringing her down the widest hallway, lined with fountains that spouted streams of colored water over their heads. The hall dead-ended at a pair of doors encrusted with a jeweled mosaic. Two diamond unicorns racing across a field of amethyst flowers. Sophie couldn't help wondering just how rich Fitz's family had to live in a place like this. Though everything she'd seen in the elven world spoke of wealth, it felt very intimidating. Alden squeezed her hand.
"You have nothing to be afraid of."
She tried to make herself believe him as Fitz pulled the doors open and led them into a formal dining room. Sheer silk curtains covered the glass walls, drawing the eye up to an enormous chandelier. A waterfall of long, shimmering crystals that hung over a round table set with domed platters and fancy goblets. Three figures in jewel-encrusted circlets rose from the plush throne-like chairs surrounding the table. A second too late, Sophie realized she should have curtsied. Not that she knew how. She stared at the silver capes fastened at the base of their necks, with clasps that looked like glowing golden keys, and felt horribly underdressed. Everyone wore jewels and lush fabrics, except her and Fitz, and he was in disguise.
"Counselors, this is Sophie Foster,"
Alden introduced with a quick bow.
"Sophie, this is Kenric, Oralai, and Bronte."
Kenric was built like a football player, with wild red hair and a big toothy grin. Oralai looked like a fairy princess, rosy cheeks and long golden ringlets. And then there was Bronte. As Sophie met his cold gaze, she could see what Alden meant about Bronte being hard to impress. He was the smallest of the three, with cropped brown hair and sharp features. He wasn't bad-looking, but there was something strange about his appearance she couldn't put her finger on. She gasped when she realized what it was.
"What?"
Bronte demanded. Five pairs of blue eyes focused on her, and she stared at the floor as she mumbled,
"Sorry, I was surprised by your ears."
"My ears,"
Bronte repeated, confused. Fitz's whole body shook with laughter. Sophie squirmed as one by one the others joined him. Bronte did not look at all pleased to be left out of the joke.
"I think she's surprised that your ears are pointy,"
Alden finally answered.
"Our ears change shape as we age. Eventually it'll happen to all of us."
"I'm going to get pointy ears?"
Her hands darted to her head, like they might have already transformed.
"Not for a few thousand years," Alden promised. "By then I doubt you'll mind."
Sophie sank into a chair, barely noticing that Fitz sat next to her. Her brain was on auto-repeat.
1,000 years, 1,000 years, 1,000 years.
"How long do elves live?" she asked.
Everyone looked young and vibrant, even Bronte.
"We don't know,"
Kenric said, scooting his chair a touch closer to Aurelie's than he really needed to.
"No one's died of old age yet."
Sophie rubbed her forehead. It actually hurt her brain, trying to understand this.
"So, you're saying elves are immortal?"
"No,"
A trace of sorrow hid in Alden's voice.
We can die. But our bodies stop aging when we reach adulthood. We don't get wrinkles or gray hair. Only our ears age.
He smiled at Bronte, who glowered back.
Bronte belongs to a group we call the Ancients, which is why his ears are so distinct.
Please, help yourselves, he added, pointing to the domed platters in front of each guest. Sophie uncovered hers and fought to hide her grimace. Black strips and purple mushy glop didn't exactly scream, "Eat me." She forced herself to take a bite. Stunned, when the purple goop tasted like the juiciest cheeseburger ever. What is this stuff?
That's mashed carnissa root. The black strips are umber leaves, Alden explained.
Sophie took a bite of umber leaf.
Tastes like chicken.
You eat animals?
Fitz asked, in a tone that would have made more sense if she'd said she ate toxic waste. Sophie nodded, squirming when Fitz grimaced.
I take it elves are vegetarians.
Everyone nodded. She took another bite to hide her horror. It wasn't that she liked eating animals, but she couldn't imagine living off only vegetables. Of course, if the vegetables tasted like cheeseburgers, maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
So, Sophie.
Bronte sneered her name like it bothered him to say it.
Alden tells me you're a telepath.
She swallowed her mouthful, and it sank into her stomach with a thud. It felt wrong discussing her secret so openly.
Yes, she's been reading minds since she was 5. Isn't that right, Sophie?
Alden asked when she didn't respond. She nodded. Kenric's and Oralai's jaws dropped.
That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard,
Bronte argued.
It's unusual, Alden corrected.
Bronte rolled his eyes as he turned to Sophie.
Let's see how good you are, then. Tell me what I'm thinking.
Sophie's mouth went dry as everyone fell silent, waiting for her. She glanced at Fitz, remembering his warning about the rules of telepathy.
He gave you permission, Fitz told her.
She nodded, taking a deep breath to stay calm. Apparently, the test had begun. 8. Sophie needed to pass. She wanted the proper education Fitz had mentioned. She wanted to learn how the world really worked. So she closed her eyes, trying to relax enough to concentrate. She reached out with her mind, like she had the day before. Bronte's mind felt different from Fitz's. Deeper somehow, like she was stretching her mental shadow much further. And when she finally felt his thoughts, they were more like an icy gust than a gentle breeze.
You're thinking that you're the only one at this table with any common sense, she announced. And you're tired of watching Kenric stare at Oralai.
Bronte's jaw fell open, and Kenric's face turned as red as his hair. Oralai looked down at her plate, her cheeks flushing pink.
I take it that's right? Alden asked,
hiding his smile behind his hand. Bronte nodded, looking angry, chagrined, and incredulous all at the same time.
How can that be? An ancient mind is almost impenetrable. The key word in that sentence is almost,
Alden reminded him.
Don't feel bad. She's also breached Fitz's blocking.
Guilt tugged at Sophie's conscience as she watched Fitz flush red, especially when Bronte grinned and said,
Sounds like Alden's golden boy isn't as infallible as everyone thinks.
It's more likely that Sophie is exceptionally special, Alden corrected.
Fitz also saw her lift more than 10 times her weight, with telekinesis yesterday.
You're kidding,
Kenrick gasped, recovering from his embarrassment.
At her age? Now that, I have to see.
Sophie shrank in her chair.
But I don't know how I did it. It just sort of happened.
Just relax, Sophie. Why not try something small?
Alden pointed to the crystal goblet in front of her. That didn't sound too hard. And maybe it was like her telepathy. Another sense she had to learn how to use. She replayed the accident, remembering the way she'd found the strength deep inside and pushed it out through her fingers. Could she do that again? She raised her arm and imagined lifting the goblet with an invisible hand. Nothing happened for a second, and her palm started to sweat. Then something pulled in her stomach, and the glass floated off the table. Sophie stared at the goblet in wonder.
I did it.
That's it, Bronte scoffed, unimpressed.
He needed more? Seriously?
Give her a second. She's still getting used to her ability.
Alden put his hand on her shoulder.
Take a deep breath. Relax. Then see what else you can do. And remember, your mind has no limitations, unlike your physical body.
Alden's calm confidence gave her the courage to try harder. She tried to think about the clue he was giving her. No limitations. What did that mean?
Maybe she could lift more than one thing at once.
She blew out a breath, pretending she had 5 more imaginary hands to extend. The tug in her gut felt sharper, but it was worth it when the other 5 goblets rose like crystal flying saucers. Kenrick applauded.
Excellent control.
Her cheeks grew warm with the praise.
Thanks.
Bronte snorted.
It's a couple of glasses. I thought she was supposed to be able to lift 10 times her body weight.
Sophie bit her lip. She wasn't sure how much more she could handle, but she was determined to impress Bronte. She must be stronger than she realized. How else could she have stopped the lantern? She took another deep breath and shoved every ounce of the force she could feel in her core toward the empty chair next to Bronte. A collective gasp rang in the air as 3 chairs floated off the ground, including the one Bronte sat on.
Incredible, Alden breathed.
Sophie didn't have time to celebrate. Her stomach cramped from the strain, and her hold broke. She screamed as the goblets shattered against the table, and the chairs crashed to the floor, knocking Bronte flat on his back with a thunderous collision. For a second, no one said anything. They just stared in open-mouthed shock. But when Bronte hollered for someone to help him up, everyone burst into a fit of laughter. Except Sophie. She'd dropped one of the counselors. She was pretty sure she'd sealed her future with that mistake. Kenrick clapped her on the back, pulling her out of her worries.
I've never seen such natural talent. You're even a natural at our language. Your accent is perfect. Almost as perfect as these guys.
He pointed to Alden and Fitz.
I'm sorry, what?
She asked, assuming she'd heard him wrong. Fitz laughed.
You've been speaking the enlightened language since we leaped here. Just like you did yesterday.
She was speaking a different language? With an accent?
Our language is instinctive, Alden explained. We speak from birth. I'm sure people thought you were an interesting baby. Though to humans, our language sounds like babbling.
Her parents were always teasing her about what a noisy baby she was. She gripped the table.
Is there a word that sounds like soybean in English?
soybean?
Alden asked. I used to say it as a baby. My parents thought I was trying to say my name and mispronouncing it. They even turned it into a nickname. A really annoying one.
She blushed when Fitz chuckled beside her.
Kenric shrugged.
I can't think of what that would be.
Fitz and Oralai nodded, but Alden looked pale.
What is it?
Bronte asked him, still dusting off his cape from his fall. Alden waved the words away.
Probably nothing.
I'll decide if it's nothing,
Bronte insisted.
Alden sighed.
It's possible. She was saying, Soldreen. But it's a stretch.
Bronte's mouth tightened into a hard line. What does Soldreen mean? Sophie asked. Alden hesitated before he answered.
It's the proper name for a moonlock, a rare species of bird.
And that's bad because... She hated the way everyone was looking at her, like she was a puzzle they couldn't solve. Adults were always looking at her that way, but usually she could hear their thoughts and know why they were so bothered. She missed that now.
It's not bad. It's just... interesting,
Alden said quietly.
Bronte snorted. Troubling is what it is.
Why would it be troubling? Sophie asked.
It would be an uncomfortable coincidence. But most likely, you were trying to say your name. You were hearing it all the time, so it's natural that you would try to repeat it.
Alden said it like he was trying to convince himself as much as her.
Well, I think I've heard quite enough to make my decision,
Bronte barked, shoving all thoughts of moonlarks out of her mind.
I vote against, and you will not convince me otherwise.
Sophie wasn't surprised, but she couldn't fight off her panic. Had she failed? Kenric shook his head.
You're being absurd, Bronte. I vote in favor, and you won't convince me otherwise.
She held her breath as all eyes turned to Oralai for the final vote. Oralai hadn't said a word the entire time, so Sophie had no idea where she stood.
Give me your hand, Sophie.
Oralai said in a voice as fragile and lovely as her face.
Oralai's an empath, Fitz explained. She can feel your emotions.
Sophie's arm shook as she extended her hand. Oralai grasped it with a delicate touch.
I feel a lot of fear and confusion,
Oralai whispered.
But I've never felt such sincerity. And there's something else. I'm not sure I can describe it.
She opened her huge azure eyes and stared at Sophie.
You have my vote.
Alden clapped his hands together with a huge grin.
That settles it then. For now,
Bronte corrected.
This will be revisited. I'll make sure of it.
Alden's smile faded.
When?
We should wait till the end of the year. Give Sophie some time to adjust,
Kenric announced.
Excellent,
Alden agreed.
Fools,
Bronte grumbled.
I invoke my right as senior counselor to demand a probe.
Alden rose with a nod.
I'd planned as much. I've arranged to bring her to Quinlan as soon as we're done here.
Sophie knew she should probably celebrate, but she was too busy trying to decipher the word probe. That didn't sound fun.
What's a probe?
She asked Fitz, as Alden led everyone else out of the room. Fitz leaned back in his chair.
Just a different way to read your mind. It's no big deal. Happens all the time when you're in telepathy training, which it looks like you'll be in. I can't believe you passed. It looked iffy there for a minute.
I know, she sighed. Why did Bronte demand a probe?
Because he's a pain. Well, that, and I think he's worried that my dad couldn't read your mind.
Worried? I guess maybe bothered is a better word. My dad's really good, and so am I.
He flashed a cocky smile. So if we can't read your mind, it's kind of like, who can?
Okay, she said, trying to make sense of what he was saying. But why does he care if no one can read my mind?
Probably because of your upbringing.
She took a deep breath, reluctant to say the next words. You mean the fact that my family is human? And I'm not? A second passed before he nodded. Emptiness exploded inside her. So it wasn't a mistake. She really wasn't related to her family. And Fitz knew. He wouldn't look at her, and she could tell he was uncomfortable. She choked down the pain, saving it for later, when she'd be able to deal with it in private. She cleared her throat, trying to sound normal.
Why would that concern him?
Because it's never happened before.
The warm, bright room felt suddenly colder.
Never?
No.
It was a tiny word, but the implications it carried were huge. Why was she living with humans? Before she could ask, Alden swept back into the room.
Sophie, why don't you come with me, and we'll get you something else to wear? You'd better change too, Fitz.
Sophie hesitated. She should probably make them take her home. Her parents had to know by now that she'd ditched school. Then again, she was already in trouble. Might as well stall the punishment as long as possible. Plus, she wasn't ready to go home yet. She needed more answers.
Where are we going?
She asked as she followed Alden out of the room. Alden smiled.
How would you like to see Atlantis?
9.
This is Atlantis?
Sophie couldn't quite hide her disappointment. They were in the middle of nowhere, on a patch of dark rock surrounded by white-capped waves. The only signs of life were a few seagulls, and all they did was screech and poop. It was hardly the lost continent she'd expected.
This is how we get to Atlantis,
Alden corrected, as he stepped across a tide pool toward a triangular rock.
Atlantis is underneath us, where light doesn't reach. We can't leap there.
It was hard not to slip on the slick rocks as she followed Fitz, especially in the red shoes Alden insisted she wear to match the long gown. She'd begged to wear pants, but apparently it was a sign of status for a girl to wear a gown, especially in Atlantis, which Alden explained was a noble city, which meant members of the nobility had offices there. The empire waist and beaded neckline of her dress made her feel like she was wearing a costume. It was even stranger seeing Fitz in elven clothes, a long blue tunic, with elaborate embroidery around the edges, and slender pockets sewn into the sleeves. The exact same size as his Pathfinder. Black pants with pockets at the ankles, so he didn't have to sit on the stuff he carried, he'd explained, and black boots completed the look. No sign of tights or pointy shoes, thankfully, but he looked more like an elf now, which made everything more real. A rock moved under her foot, and she fell into Fitz's arms. Sorry, she whispered, knowing her face was as red as her dress. Fitz shrugged.
I'm used to it. My sister Bianna is clumsy too.
She wasn't sure she liked that comparison. So, Atlantis really sank? She asked, changing the subject as she followed him to a ledge high above the water.
The ancients engineered the catastrophe, Alden answered.
He opened a secret compartment in the side of the strange rock, revealing hundreds of tiny glass bottles, grabbed one, and joined them on the ledge.
How else would humans think we disappeared?
Sophie glanced at the label on the bottle. One whirlpool. Open with care.
Step back.
Alden uncorked the top and flung the bottle into the ocean. A huge blast of wind whipped against their faces, and the roar of churning water filled the air.
Ladies first,
Alden shouted, pointing to the edge.
I'm sorry, what?
Maybe you should go first, Dad,
Fitz suggested. Alden nodded, gave a quick wave, and jumped. Sophie screamed. Fitz laughed beside her.
Your turn.
He dragged her toward the edge.
Please tell me you're joking,
she begged as she tried, and failed, to pull away.
It looks worse than it is,
he promised. She gulped, staring at the maelstrom swirling beneath her. Cold, salty water sprayed her face.
You seriously expect me to jump?
I can push you if you'd prefer.
Don't even think about it.
Better jump then. I'll give you to the count of five.
He stepped toward her.
One.
Okay, okay.
She wanted to keep what little dignity she had left. She took a slow, deep breath, closed her eyes, and stepped off the edge, screaming the whole way down. It took her a second to realize she wasn't drowning, and another after that to stop flailing around like an idiot. She opened her eyes and gasped. The whirlpool formed a tunnel of air, dipping and weaving through the dark water like the craziest water slide ever. She was actually starting to enjoy the ride when she launched out of the vortex onto an enormous sponge. It felt like being licked from head to toe by a pack of kittens, minus the kitten breath. And then the sponge sprang back, leaving her standing on a giant cushion. Her hands froze as she smoothed her dress.
I'm not wet.
The sponge absorbs the water when you land. Incoming.
Alden yanked her out of the way as Fitz rocketed onto the sponge, right where she'd been standing. She jumped off the sponge to the slightly squishy ground. It felt like packed wet sand.
Now, this is Atlantis.
Alden gestured to the gleaming metropolis ahead of them. Sophie's eyes felt like they had to stretch to take it all in. The city was wrapped in a dome of air, which faded into the ocean beyond. Twisted crystal towers soared into the skyline, bathing the silver city in the soft blue glow radiating from their pointed spires. The buildings lined an intricate network of canals, interconnected by arched bridges. It reminded her of pictures she'd seen of Venice, but everything was sleek and modern and clean. Despite being at the bottom of the ocean, the air was crisp and fresh. The only clue that they were underwater was a muted hum in the background, like the sound she'd heard when she put a seashell to her ear.
You guys build with crystal a lot,
she observed, as she followed Alden into the city. Alden smiled.
Crystal stores the energy we use to power everything, and it's cut to let precisely the right amount of light in. Of course, we had to make some changes when we moved Atlantis underwater. We plated the buildings with silver so they'd reflect the firelight we created in the spires and help illuminate the city.
Why did you sink Atlantis and not the other cities?
We built Atlantis for humans. That's why you know the real name of the city. A long time ago, humans walked these very streets.
Sophie looked around. Elves wandered the shops looking young and elegant. The men wore heavy velvet capes, like they belonged at a Renaissance fair, and some of the women's gowns shifted color as they moved. Signs advertised 2-for-1 specials on bottled lightning or fast approval on spyball applications. A child strolled past with some sort of hybrid chicken lizard on a leash. No wonder humans invented crazy myths after the elves disappeared. They reached the main canal, and Alden hailed one of the carriages floating along the water. a silver almond-shaped boat with two rows of high-backed benches. A driver in an elbow-length green cape steered from the front bench, drawing the reins of some sort of brown creature skimming the surface of the waves. Sophie shrieked as the 8-foot-long scorpion with deadly pincers reared against the reins, its tail curled up, looking ready to sting.
What is that thing?
An Eurypterid, Alden explained. A sea scorpion.
You're not afraid, are you?
Fitz asked. She moved farther away.
What is it with girls?
Fitz leaned down and stroked the shiny brown shell along the Eurypterid's back. Sophie waited for the pincers to slice him in half, but the creature held still, emitting a low hissing sound, like it enjoyed being petted.
See? Harmless.
Fitz jumped into the carriage. Alden followed, holding the door open for her.
Quinlan's waiting, Sophie. It's time to find out what's in that impenetrable mind of yours.
10. Every fiber of Sophie's being wanted to run far, far away from the mutant insect of doom, especially since it would take her to get probed. But she gritted her teeth and ran into the carriage, pressing her back against the bench to be as far as possible from the hideous sea scorpion.
Where to?
The driver asked Alden with a laugh.
Quinlan Sundin's office, please.
The driver shook the reins, and the giant scorpion thrashed its tail against the water, pulling them along.
So, who is this Quinlan guy anyway? Sophie asked.
Alden smiled.
He's the best probe I know. If anyone can slip into your brain, it's him.
Something about the words, slip in, gave her the heebie-jeebies. She tried to think about something else to stay calm.
Why does he work down here?
Atlantis wasn't a bad place, but she imagined the commute would get annoying after a while.
Atlantis is our most secure city. Anyone and anything that needs added protection is here, including your file.
I have a file?
A highly classified one.
What's in it?
You'll see soon enough.
She opened her mouth to ask another question, but Alden shook his head and pointed to the driver. She'd have to wait till they were alone. The carriage entered some sort of business district. The streets were packed with elves, all in long black capes, and the silver building stood taller than the others, with round windows tracing down the sides, and glowing signs bearing their names. Treasury. Registry. Interspecial. Services. But half the signs were unreadable.
What's with the random strings of letters? She asked, pointing to a building with gibberish for a sign.
Alden tried to follow her gaze.
The runes?
Is that what these are?
She held out her wrist, running her fingers along the nonsense writing on the Nexus. Alden nodded.
That's our ancient alphabet.
You can't read it.
Fitz sounded more surprised than she would have liked. Being the clueless one was getting old, fast. Alden stroked his chin.
But you can tell their letters.
Yeah, but it's just a big jumble. Is that going to be a problem for school?
She held her breath. What would the other kids think if she couldn't even read?
Nah, it's rarely used, Fitz said, and she could breathe again. Only when they want to be fancy or something.
She hesitated, hating that she had to ask her next question again.
Is it wrong that I can't read them?
Reading should be instinctive, Alden admitted. But maybe your human education affected you somehow. We've never had anyone with your upbringing. So it's hard to say.
There was that word again. Upbringing. This giant gap between her and everyone else. How was she ever supposed to fit in? If she was the only kid who went home to her human parents every night.